Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
In this episode of the podcast, we talk about the March 22nd days in football history and the head of the NFL steps down and some future stars rise to the occasion when their time comes. It's all coming up in just a moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're podcasting from the Pigpen in Western Pennsylvania to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome once again to the Pigpen, where today we're going to talk about March 22nd football history, and we have a lot of stories to tell you today. Before we get to those, let me tell you a little something that happened way back. I think I was in seventh grade playing football for my middle school parochial team, and I had some good friends on the team, and there was also some kids that I wasn't super good friends with, but I knew, and we had been classmates for many years. Well, the eighth graders were a year older than us, and they were sort of the kings of the team, and they wanted to show their dominance, and they had a ritual before practice, before the coaches got there. They would play the game of kill the man with the ball. And what it was is you would take your helmets off, you'd have all your pads on ready for practice, and you'd throw the ball up in the air. Whoever caught it, all the other people would just try to get the ball from them, tackle them, you know, beat the snot out of them, basically. And it's a common game for young kids. We look at it as adults now and say, what the heck were we thinking? But it happened. And one occasion, there was many times that the ball was thrown to me. And of course, the older fellows would just like to take a ribbon and knock it to you because you were the young seventh graders and you deserved to get beat up a little bit, sort of a hazing type ritual. Well, one time, one of the guys who was a little bit more of a bully decided to take it a little extra step and got a little bit more fierce with it, and he was much larger than me, had me on the ground and, you know, flopping me around a little bit. And then one of my guys that I was a classmate with that I'd never realized I was that close to this moment stepped in, told him to knock it off. He was a bigger as a eighth grader, and got him off of me and told him to, you know, settle down and, you know, what was he thinking. And those two got in a spat a little bit until the coaches got there. But I was always thankful for him that. And it's just sometimes, you know, you don't realize where your friends are and who is loyal to you until the chips are really down. And he really stepped up at that moment and really helped me out. And it was just that moment of potential that he realized and really stepped in and was a hero. And that's, we have a lot of that happening today in our football history headlines. And as we start off on March 22nd, 1989, Pete Rozelle announces his retirement as the NFL commissioner after 29 years. Rozelle, if you remember, was a surprise choice to become the NFL commissioner to replace the legendary Burt Bell, who had suddenly and tragically passed away at a Steelers versus Eagles game. Ironically, those two teams he had both formerly owned. At the time, Pete was in the front office of the Los Angeles Rams and had recently completed deals like the blockbuster one we told you about a few weeks ago, with running back Ollie Mattson being traded to the Rams from the Cardinals for 11 players. Rozelle, of course, was eventually replaced by Paul Tagliabue after he stepped down in 1989, and Tagliabue did a nice job too. March 22nd, 1879, we have a birthday. Baltimore, Maryland, Art Poe, the great end of the Princeton University Tigers, was born. He was poetry in motion, according to some accounts, and after all, he was the nephew of the famous writer Edgar Allan Poe. The NFF says that Arthur was one of six Poe brothers to star for the Orange and Black, and one of two to make All-Americans in selections. Poe was quite troublesome for opposing teams, especially with rival Yale. They sometimes even forgot about the undersized player, much to their detriment, such as the opening half of the 1898 Princeton-Yale game, where Pope picked up a Yale fumble and raced 95 yards for the only touchdown of the game. The next season, Poe attempted the first dropkick field goal of his collegiate career and successfully banged it through the uprights and beat Yale again, this time by the narrowest of margins, 11-10. The Tigers lost only one game during those two campaigns, a 5-0 decision to Cornell in 1899. Art Poe was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1969. March 22, 1931, Cleveland, Oklahoma. Billy Vessels, the fine halfback from the Oklahoma Sooners, celebrated the anniversary of his birth. The city of Dallas has hosted the annual Oklahoma versus Texas football contest many times over the years. In 1950, the game became extra special because, according to the National Football Foundation, both teams were undefeated and looking to take a stake at the claim as a top team in the country. Sophomore Billy Vessels had become a great weapon in Oklahoma's backfield. On this day, he scored two touchdowns, the last with 4 minutes to play, to lead Oklahoma to a 14-13 victory. That's important, that 14-13 victory, as you'll see in a moment. This sent the Longhorns to their only loss of the season. 6 weeks later, he rushed for 208 yards and three touchdowns as the Sooners outlasted Nebraska 49-35, a game that clinched the national championship for Oklahoma. The two rivals finished 1-2 in the final UP poll, with Oklahoma 1, Texas number 2. But this was just the start of Bill Vessels' brilliant career. Vessels would go on to receive a consensus All-American credit in 1952 and become Oklahoma's first Heisman Trophy winner for the performances in his senior year. Billy's career statistics included 35 touchdowns with 210 points for an amazing 2,085 yards rushing. He had 1,072 yards rushing in just 1952 alone. The NFF voters seized the opportunity in 1974 to place Billy Vessels into the College Football Hall of Fame. March 22, 1954, Warren, Ohio. The University of Notre Dame's Ross Browner claimed his date of birth. Browner is one of the most decorated college players in NCAA history, as he played defensive end for the Irish in 1973 and then from 1975 to 1977. Ross was the Outland Trophy winner in 1976 for being the top interior lineman in the country, as well as claiming the unanimous All-American honors in his final two collegiate seasons. As a senior, Browner captured the coveted Lombardi Trophy as the nation's best lineman, both offense or defense, and the Maxwell Award as the nation's best player. The ballot came in from the Football Foundation voters in 1999, sending Ross Browner into the College Football Hall of Fame. Ross registered a school record of 340 tackles, 10 deflected passes, and 2 block kicks. Browner also put points on the board as he scored a touchdown and 2 safeties. The touchdown came when he blocked a Navy punt and recovered it in the end zone. His safety was in the 1973 Northwestern game when Ross blocked the punt and the ball rolled out of the end zone. The second safety was against Miami of Florida in the 1975 season. Browner beat his blocker and then tackled the Hurricane quarterback in the end zone. Browner went on to play 9 years with the Cincinnati Bengals and one with the Green Bay Packers in the National Football League. What a great player he was. And another one from more modern times, March 22, 1960, Conway, Pennsylvania. The University of Pittsburgh's big offensive tackle, Jimbo Covert, arrived into this life. His bio on the footballfoundation.org site says that Covert joined the Pitt team wanting to be a defensive lineman. Jimbo was skilled at the position too, but the Panthers were loaded at talent in the defensive area on the line. An injury in his second year gave him some time to think, and the results were that he asked his coaches if he could switch to play offensive line instead, in an attempt to get on the field more. What a great choice it was for all involved, as Covert became a starter on the same line as Mark May and Bill Frolick. Pitt was on fire with offensive firepower, and the Panthers posted 2 consecutive 11-1 seasons, twice finishing as the nation's second-ranked team. In his 3 seasons at tackle, he allowed only 3 sacks, none as a senior. His sacks allowed statistics even more remarkable in the fact that Pitt averaged 34 passes a game. That year, he became a unanimous All-America after his first team All-American season in 1981. The National Football Foundation Council approved the name of Jimbo Covert for induction into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2003. The Chicago Bears picked Jimbo 6th overall in the 1983 NFL Draft, and in 9 seasons, he made the Pro Bowl and was twice an All-Pro and led the Bears to victory in Super Bowl XX. The Offensive Lineman of the Year went to Covert in 1986. And Jimbo Covert was enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame with the 2020 induction class. March 22, 1969, Chicago, Illinois. The Miami Hurricanes stud defensive tackle Russell Maryland was born. Believe it or not, Maryland did not have a tremendous amount of college suitors as he was over 300 pounds and not the mobile player that we've come to know him as. The University of Michigan saw potential, though, in the youngster, and they redshirted him, encouraging him to lose 50 pounds in that off year and have him the ideal playing weight for a man his size. The transformation was remarkable, as he had a big-time breakout game when he was a sophomore against All-American John Vitale in Michigan in 1988. It gave Maryland the confidence in his abilities and unlocked the athletic potential hiding within him. Russell went on to notch up 20 and a half sacks, 279 tackles, and 25 tackles for loss in his career. Maryland helped the Hurricanes to two national titles, four bowl wins, and a perfect home record, as well as a 44-4 overall record in his four seasons at Coral Gables. Russell Maryland was inducted in the College Football Hall of Fame in 2011, and after classes were over for Maryland, he was the first pick in the 1991 NFL draft by the Dallas Cowboys. Russell was a big part of the Cowboys, winning three Super Bowls. He also played in the 1993 Pro Bowl and started 140 of 154 games in his 10-year career. He posted 375 tackles, 24 and a half sacks, and forced nine fumbles as a professional. Those are just some great players that didn't always start off at what they wanted to be, but turned into something special and became Hall of Famers at their respective positions, either in the college or the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And a couple of people like Jimbo Covert made it into both. So those are just some remarkable players for this March 22nd, in a day where we respect and see that change and transformation in players to reach their potential. Now, we'd also like you to reach your potential of getting all of the sports history news that you possibly can by going to the sportshistorynetwork.com, our partner station that has all the great sports history podcasts and blog posts and just anything you need to know about sports. It is the headquarters of Sports Yesteryear, and it's getting bigger and bigger every day. Arnie Chapman's doing a great job there, and you can find our podcast there as well as 20 other ones right now, and it's, like I said, it's growing every day. You can also go to pigskindispatch.com/podcast, and you'll see all of the Pigskin Daily History Dispatches and all the bonus trailers and everything else right there in one place, as well as sportshistorynetwork.com. So you can check those out there or your favorite podcast player. And you can, on the pigskindispatch.com, we have all kinds of great articles and contests and everything going on there too, as well as our powerful Earl to Go search engine, where you can look up anything in the gridiron and it'll pull it up not only on our site but our partner sites too. So we want to make sure you check those out, as well as our bonus podcast today. We have the Football by Numbers resuming, and we have the greatest NFL players that wore the number 19 with Dan and Andrew Newman joining me to discuss, and we'll find out who those top 10 players are that wore the number 19 in NFL history. Tomorrow, on the 23rd, we have Arnie Chapman joining us to go over the greatest NFL players of wearing the number 20 for our bonus podcast there. And you have our regular podcast of the Football History Headlines for March 23rd as well. So until tomorrow, everybody, have a great Gridiron Day. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.